but it's also much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store. Out among the stacks of new releases, browsing with your future new best friends, you're gonna find a book you'll love to pieces. The girl behind the counter recommends dollar books and shelves of graphic novels. Action figures, board games, toys, and models to add to your new Comic Wednesday haul. The comic book store, the comic book store. Cause that's where the books live, but it's also much more. It's the heart of the art form that we all adore. Your friendly neighborhood comic book store.
Happy 2021, everybody. This is the first official Source Material Live of the new year. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, we are talking Red Sonja and Vampirella meet Betty and Veronica, as they say in the Appalachia. On the Disney Junior Channel, they pronounce it Vampirina. Whoa, Vampirina. No, Red Sonja and Vampirella meet Betty and Veronica. We're going to be discussing the first half of that series. It finished up with issue number 12 earlier this year. The trade actually comes out February of 2021. But we're going to talk about the first trade, the first six issues. Joining me tonight to talk Red Sonja and Vampirella meet Betty and Veronica is Alexis Haina of Honeysuckle Rose Creations. How do you do, madam?
Love telling people that this is a book that I'm reviewing, and then they just look at me weird and I go, yes, we exist in a world where this is a thing.
It's funny, I was reading the comments on the site that I was reading this on today. I read it digitally, and a lot of the comments were, enough with the Archie crossovers, we've had it. And I'm like, no, more Archie crossovers, more stupid crossovers. Transformers and My Little Pony and Betty and Veronica meet half the comic book universe and you name it, and we're going to be doing another crossover at the end of the month. It's Back to the Future and Transformers. That they're doing that crossover, so I could do an entire year full of these if that damn Hollywood, damn you Hollywood, would stop making all the normal comics into television shows and movies. I would just fill up the calendar with bizarre crossovers.
Hey, I'm still waiting for my Zatanna meets Sabrina Spellman. Gail Simone, I am a huge fan of yours, and I know that you occasionally check out my board. Make this a thing. You would be awesome at writing this.
Well, the person who wrote Red Sonja, Vampirella, you're welcome, Jesse, and Betty and Veronica is Amy Chu. And I came to know Amy Chu because she worked on the Poison Ivy limited series, Cycle of Life and Death. That was the first time I had read her, and I actually really enjoyed that. I gave it to my daughter, who there was a brief period where she was like obsessed with Poison Ivy because I had shown her the Schumacher Batman movie with Uma Thurman as Poison
with
Ivy.
You never show that movie to kids.
That was the first one I showed them. We've done Batman in reverse order. I started with Batman and Robin and went backwards.
What kind of a father are you?
The kind that knows what my children can tolerate and what they can't. And when I did that, they were significantly younger. And they thought the fourth Batman Schumacher movie was the best. My son was cracking up at every Arnold Schwarzenegger line, because really, why wouldn't you? Hey, chill. The Iceman cometh.
I went to live riff tracks of Batman and Robin. They mm-hmm. started off the movie by saying that every time Arnold Schwarzenegger made an ice pun, we should take a shot. By the time we actually got to them getting up to the observatory to seize the telescope, someone looked back and said, is anyone else still doing it? There was no reaction. Way to go. I think everyone in the audience is either drunk or dead.
So, other than Red Sonja and Vampirella meet Betty and Veronica, she's worked on a Red Sonja, just a normal Red Sonja comic, something called Deja Thoris. the aforementioned Poison Ivy. She's worked on some Kiss comics. She wrote a couple of Wonder Woman 77. She worked on a Green Hornet series, and a bunch of other things. I could say she's done some Wonder Woman, some other Wonder Woman, not the Wonder Woman 77. She did a DMC comic, you know, as in Run DMC. She worked on a Deadpool. So, yeah, so Amy Chu's been around a while. She's been writing comics for a bit. And she is joined by... artist Maria Sinapo, among others. There's a lot of variant covers here, so I'm looking at the comic vine, you know, who did what, and, like, half the people on this list all worked on covers.
Oh, God, yeah. I know that variant covers are traditional in comics like this, and I know that you're going to get a decent amount. This is the most variant covers I have ever seen in a book. And not gonna lie, they're all good. I didn't see any, and I looked at them and I thought, okay, who bribed who to get this in there? They're all good, but there are so freaking many. Which one do you think is your favorite of the variants? Do you remember?
I like the ones that look like either like VHS tapes or, you know, old drive-in movie posters. Those are fun.
Those are nice. I also really like the one that the two that were set up like Street Fighter versus.
Those are fun. I like the ones that where Betty and Veronica look like traditional Archie characters, but they also drew Vampirella and Red Sonja as traditional Archie characters, and those are adorable.
I also like the one. I like the one of them sitting where they've switched costumes, and Veronica's hiding behind Red Sonja, just clearly not interested in coming out. And you've got Jughead and Archie in the back in the cheerleader outfits.
So this first issue came out in May of 2020, May 8th, it hit the, was the in-store date, and we're talking about this for no good reason, just because I saw that this existed, you saw this existed, and like, you know, I occasionally need to break the monotony of trying to cover the various TV and movie adaptations and just do something for the fun of it.
Occasionally, you can't find something that's trending, so you're just going to do something you enjoy.
And the last time this is not the first time we've done one of the Archie crossovers. Way back, before I took over the schedule from Jesse, I told Jesse, hey, there's a bunch of movies coming out that have comic book tie-ins. It's your show. Just make sure you pick, for those weeks, you pick the comic book. And one of them was Predator. And now... Predator has a long storied history on Dark Horse, and I figured he would choose a standard Predator, one of the many standard Predator comics from Dark Horse. He chose Archie Meets Predator.
Because it's Jesse, of course he did.
Yeah. And after that I took the schedule away from him. But no,
you go sit in the corner. You know what you did.
But I think he's also done like Punisher Meets Archie. You and I, and I think he might have been on that show too, I don't remember anymore, we did Harley and Ivy meet Betty and Veronica. So there's becoming a long story tradition of doing Archie crossovers on this network. So yeah, we're just doing it for the fun of it. And I like Red Sonja. We haven't covered any of her solo books as of yet. I think there's a Red Sonja reboot in development. I'm kind of waiting for that before I tackle any traditional Red Sonja stuff. Same thing with Conan. I haven't done, as much as I love both, we haven't done a lot on here, even though like Conan has come back to Marvel and he's everywhere, including in the Avengers. But I keep waiting on like whatever Conan series is going to come out to do that one. We did a Vampirella book about a year or so ago. For one of the Superblog team ups, I think like vampires was the theme, and so you know, everyone's picking a lot of the typical vampire fare that's out there. And I went, what slutty whore vampire thing can I come up with to make people uncomfortable? Oh, look, Vampirella. So that's how I became. So that's how I became a fan. And we did one of her trade paperbacks that she's been in. So, remind the people, how much are you into the Archie comics? Have you read anything else besides what I've mentioned regarding Betty and Veronica?
Not a lot. I have watched most of the seasons of Riverdale. I gave up after they started injecting way too many musical numbers. I hate to say it, Riverdale started off really promising, and then it quickly became evident that they were trying to turn their leads into pop stars, and suddenly it started to feel like a Disney Channel series, but aimed at a slightly higher demographic.
Don't they, like, murder people and shit on that show?
Oh, yeah.
Weird.
But like I said, there are so many freaking musical numbers. There's a whole scene where Veronica performs All That Jazz, like the entire number from Chicago. And I remember watching and going, it's like, okay, well, the actress is a good, all the actors and actresses are good singers. No complaints. But I'm sitting there going, if I really wanted to watch this kind of stuff, I'd go watch Glee. You know, yeah. I don't really want to watch these characters constantly. They made a point of doing one musical episode per season, but then, yeah, all of a sudden everyone started singing. I'm like, okay, enough.
Now I need Jughead two-handing a huge hoagie while wearing Speedos and singing Come to the Cabaret. You're welcome for that image.
Yeah.
All right.
I have a wicked crush on the actor playing Jughead in Riverdale. He is gorgeous.
I don't even know who it is. I just think, Jughead, food, the image to me was funny. All right.
This will make you feel old, actually. You're familiar with the Adam Sandler movie Big Daddy, right?
I think I may have seen it once. It's not one of my favorite Adam Sandler movies.
Okay, the kid who plays the orphan that Adam Sandler takes in?
Yeah.
Now Jughead.
Wow, I'm glad he's still working.
Yeah, well, okay, actually, I hate to say it, it's a pair of twins, and so, you know, one of those twins is Jughead. You know what I mean. A lot of kid actors, they use twins.
Yeah.
Yeah, for child labor laws and shit.
All right, so the first synopsis of issue number one here, or the synopsis for issue number one, mystery, murder, mayhem descends on Riverdale as four of your favorite comic book women meet for the first time. A string of paranormal unsolved murders leads the vampire hunter Vampirella and her sword-wielding barbarian partner Red Sonja to the small, sleepy town where things always seem to happen. There, you ain't kidding, Buster. There they discover Betty and Veronica, investigative reporters for the high school newspaper, also hot on the trail of the same killer. And so we have the issue open here after we get through the 97 pages of variant covers. One of the things I liked about this right off the bat, as we open our comic and we see the high school science teacher prick his finger, and of course he's immediately killed, presumably by a vampire of sorts. We have Red Sonja in her battle gear skulking around because, you know, I love the Red Sonja character, but this is definitely one of those examples, and I think I was talking to Chris about this, Chris Sheehan, about how so many women in comic books that are fighters are always drawn with the stupidest outfits. Like, you would never wear this, and she's supposed to be a barbarian woman.
There's this great video I saw on YouTube ages ago. It takes place in, like, a World of Warcraft setting, but it's live-action actors. And you have these two, a guy and a girl come in, and they both got the same amount of battle points, and they go to a shop, and the shop goes, for that many battle points, you can upgrade to the new silver armor. And the guy goes, yeah, that's awesome. And he gets this really kick-ass breastplate and, you know, all this shit for the armor, and it looks awesome. And then the female character comes and goes, yeah, I want the armor too. And he hands her a chainmail bikini.
Of course he does. And it was actually you who I was having this conversation. We were talking about Wonder Woman's outfit. And I said, I preferred her in pants and the chest plate, because why in the hell would you dress like you would as Wonder Woman if you're a warrior woman? And we had that on conversation. Same thing here with Red Sonja, who's even more scantily clad. But she is quickly joined by Vampirella, who's not wearing her trademark piece of ribbons, substituting as a bathing suit. She's got a, what do you call those things, a tube top and a miniskirt?
With a keyhole neck.
Yeah. So right off the bat, one of the things I really like about this comic is the relationship between Red Sonja and Vampirella, who see each other as equals, and Red Sonja One of them refers to the other one as sister. I think it's actually Vampirella, who refers to Red Sonja as sister, and they are clearly buddies and partners. And I guess they, prior to this, there have been Vampirella meets Red Sonja comics, or vice versa. But I hadn't read any of them, so I don't know what the backstory here is. And I think somebody actually mentioned that in the comics, too, that these two have, like, a storied history together. But they have great chemistry. This is the sort of thing I'd actually like to see on screen with two good actresses. This is one of the highlights of the comic.
Agreed. They write some really good chemistry between all of the characters on this, although it kills me when Betty and Veronica sneak into the morgue. And, yeah, there's this woman in a chainmail bikini wearing a sword, and they're like, so if I was straight, you're like vampire hunters from another dimension in time? Nice to meet you. I'm Betty Cooper. And I'm just hitting my head going, only in Riverdale. Only in Riverdale.
Yeah, and we're going to get to some of the more funny bits with Red Sonja here. And I was wondering as I was reading this, has Red Sonja not been to the modern world before? Because she does a lot of bits like, later on they're going to be in a diner, and she was like, give me your finest steak and a tankard of mead. And, of course, the waitress is like, you know, thinks she's a teenage girl. So she's like, let's have some ID on you. And I'm thinking to myself, does she not know where she is? Because here's the thing about this. They are right into the mystery of who's killing these people in Riverdale. There's not a tremendous amount of time spent on the fish out of water stuff. And Vampirella seems to understand where they are and what's going on and how you should behave. Even though she's an alien from, and I love this. If you've never read a Vampirella comic and you don't remember our SBTU show, she's from another planet called Draculon, where they drink blood. Perfect.
Yeah, we even get a bit where they're asking the homeless person where to go. And, yeah, Sonja says, where does the town guard keep your bodies? And Vampirella clearly has a better, so she goes, dear fellow, would you be so kind as direct us to the morgue? So I am going to say one little complaint I have here. If you have two lead characters, both of whom have black hair and bangs, you need to do a lot more with the close-ups to actually differentiate which one is which, because more than once I got confused about which character was Vampirella and which one was Veronica.
Yeah, I could see that. So yeah, we go back and forth between Red Sonja and Vampirella, and then Betty and Veronica, who they have not met yet. They go and they investigate the morgue, da 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 da, and Vampirella comes to the conclusion that it's the Cult of Chaos very quickly. Like we're only one murder into this, but they look at the body and they see the mark on him, and it doesn't necessarily look like a traditional vampire bite. So she's like, oh, I know that mark. That's the mark of the Cult of Chaos. And we get a little bit of background as to what they are. We're going to find out later this is a red herring. But for now, we've established, you know, we've got murders. We've got potential murderers that they're trying to look for. And we are off to the races. And the six-issue story arc is just that. It's a murder mystery. It's a whodunit. Which I like. I think if you need a good strong basis for these silly team ups, and a murder mystery is a traditional one that works really well.
I'm always a fan of the murder mysteries, but of course, first we have to take them back to Veronica's house because she needs to give them a makeover.
Well, didn't we do this also with Harley and Poison Ivy?
A little bit.
Well, they switched bodies, but you know, it's the same. It's the same sort of gag. Which, I mean, this one made a little bit more sense in the sense of you can't have, I mean, Vampirella could probably get away with it, but you can't have Red Sonja running around in a, you know, in a armored bikini.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, they get them their new clothes and they concoct the story that they're European transfer students so that they can go to Riverdale High.
And do some investigating. They're doing undercover investigating in the high school, which is a setup essentially for them to do a bunch of gags with Red Sonja trying to adapt to high school life. Which again, we did this with Harley and Ivy. A lot of the same stuff here.
And again, most of the fish out of water seems to come from Red Sonja. We have her in a history class, and the teacher is discussing, what is it, the movements of tribes in the millennia between the last ice age and what we call the modern era. And the first thing Sonja does is point out, you've got that map entirely wrong.
Yep. Red Sonja cracked. A lot of the gags I thought were funny in this came from Red Sonja, this being one of them, how she's just sort of bored in class. You know, and at one point I think she says, like, I'm a fighter, not a scholar. Which I thought was kind of funny. She's like, I can read a map, that one's wrong. And of course Red Sonja joins the football team. Because of course she does.
Well, she's probably stronger and faster than any high school boy.
Yeah. So we do some bits with her. That's the thing, like, they're supposed to be hot on the trail of this murderer, and then they're supposed to be doing some investigating, but we take time out for them to do high school stuff, you know, like play football.
Kind of reminds me of that horrible Supergirl film where it's like, Supergirl gets sent to get the power source. And
oh, you mean the awesome one?
Yeah.
Where she has magic fashion powers?
Yes, because she leaves with them saying that they'll survive for like maybe a few days at most, and then she gets there and she immediately enrolls in school and takes a couple of classes and things like that. Yeah, and it's just like, so how long until your parents are dead again?
Yeah, she said. Yeah, it was the same thing. Like, Kara is supposed to be blending in so that she can find the whatchamacallit, and. You know, and instead of actually looking for the goddamn thing, she's taking classes and whatnot and fawning after the hunky lawn care person.
Anyway. Well, I can't look at the same way because, I'm sorry, I look at him and all I see is him doing coke in Die Hard.
Vampirella joined the cheerleading squad so we can have more shots of her midriff because, you know, why not? More of them playing football. They're there for a few days doing this, getting absolutely nowhere with this mystery. But the next plot point here is that the coach dies. The coach is killed, and they've drawn a pentagram around him, you know, to make it look once again like it's the Cult of Chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the end of the exciting issue number one. And we get look at the other variant ones here. Yeah, I like the one of them surfing. That's a fun one.
Oh, yeah, that is funny. Like I said, I do really enjoy the ones that have them in the classic Archie style. Okay, yeah. I love the one of them. I guess it's them at the prom, and you see Archie with Vampirella and Red Sonja, and Betty and Veronica are like, what?
Now I see the one that you're talking about where Veronica's in the Vampirella outfit, and she's like hiding behind Red Sonja.
Yeah.
I think it's Betty who can't pick up the sword.
Yeah, definitely. Vampirella's wearing Jughead's crown.
All right, so let's move on to issue number two here. The synopsis reads, the body count increases. It is this time that I need to inform the audience that body count is, in fact, in the house. Body count's in the house. Body count. The body count increases, and the mystery deepens as Vampirella, you're welcome, Jesse, and Red Sonja investigate the deaths plaguing Riverdale High. Turns out, American high school life is as mysterious and perplexing as the murders themselves. Meanwhile, Betty and Veronica have troubles of their own when they butt heads with the editor of the school newspaper over their investigative news coverage. Is there a cover-up afoot? We shall see. Yeah, not a lot of, like, good stuff with Betty and Veronica in that first issue. It's more of establishing Red Sonja and Vampirella in the mystery, and they're just kind of there to guide our fish out of waters.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about the variant covers. The second one here, where it looks like the TV guide, I like that one a lot.
You're going to forgive me. The copy that I got, all of the variant covers were slammed together at the end. Mine are not in any particular order. But yeah, that one's really good. I like that. Serial. Betty catches Archie with another woman, and Archie catches Veronica with a bloody butcher knife. Guest starring the unknown comic Burke Convoy and Dr. Joyce Brothers.
So yeah, Betty and Veronica have been arrested, and of course Veronica is, do you know who I am? Kind of a thing.
Well, I don't think they were arrested. I think they were just hauled in for questioning.
Yeah. As were Vampirella and Red Sonja. Vampirella uses her hypnotism powers. We got a bit here with the town sheriff and the detective sort of going over the case, trying to figure out what's what.
And I can't remember how well these two were established in any prior Riverdale-based comics, but these two are freaking idiots.
So far the body count is Eva Arcudi, who's the biology instructor, Jack something or other, who's a substitute science teacher, and then the assistant coach. And they're looking at the file, trying to figure out what the connection is.
And then, of course, we have them at the chocolate shop, and that's where you get Sonja saying, "Your tavern's finest steak, bloody as the new moon, and a mug of ale, cold as an old witch's," and it's cut there, but I'm pretty sure she cuts it.
Yep, and Red Sonja eats steak like I eat steak, just shoves a knife right through it, picks it off the plate, and gnaws at the thing. Ah, I love it.
This reference here is going to be horribly dated before too long, but she says, "Oh, you're doing the paleo diet, good for you."
Wah, wah, wah. Vampirella talks about being from Draculon. They give a little bit of the backstory here between Red Sonja and Vampirella. She says, "Across time, Sonja and I have met and fought together more than once. We have spilt and shared blood for greater purpose," and there's a lot of panels of them, like, killing a vampire here and killing a demon there. "Stopping the monster called Chaos the Mad God, we have sworn to track his followers together and contain the evil he unleashed on the universe. He draws his powers from his worshippers. We are sworn to stop his ascent and to rule the world." So now you know a little bit of why they're together. Jorge comes in and interrupts their meal and their conversation, and they tell him to buzz off. More of Red Sonja playing football and assaulting another player. And we move back to Betty and Veronica, and they are in class, and they have a Muslim teacher here. They go back to the biology lab to do some more investigating, and
little Betty's like, "Oh, I hope someone's feeding all these lab animals."
So they go back to the cafeteria, and Red Sonja asks, "Do they serve beer here?" She has the best lines.
That she does.
Okay, and then Jughead says, "Can I have more frozen pizza rolls?" And we're gonna see our next murder here as the cafeteria woman goes back into a dark part of the kitchen, and she finds Jorge. It's Jorge. He's been stuffed into the freezer.
It looks like from this artwork, they're also going for more of the actual Riverdale TV series for the artwork. You can see by Jughead having, it's not his usual crown. It's what I think they call a whoopee cap. And that's more of what he wears in the recent series.
So we see Jorge in the freezer, and then we cut to Betty and Veronica talking to the editor, and the editor basically was like, "You've got a bunch of unsubstantiated science fiction here. I can't print any of this without any kind of evidence." And you know, and Betty and Veronica are like, "Don't you think we've got enough of a lead here to keep going at least with it?" And she's like, "Nah," you know, like she's really fighting them here. So she automatically is suspicious in this murder mystery.
Not to mention, she seems way too focused on the federal deficit for a high school newspaper.
Yeah, a bit ridiculous. So we get a lot more Betty and Veronica in this issue. A lot, you know, and I think I brought this up with the Harley and Ivy thing, but aren't Betty and Veronica like more adversarial than this? Because here they are basically like Cagney and Lacey. They are just partnered up. They are fine with each other. They are on the scene trying to solve this mystery. Like, there's no tension between them at all. And I'm like, I thought they were more adversarial than all that.
Well, again, the Riverdale series, they are best friends, no question. And I think I could be wrong, but I think in more recent Riverdale comics, they have eased off the whole Archie's mine cat fight thing that always used to drive their rivalry.
Right.
So.
Okay. So in modern Archie comics, they are not fighting over Archie as such.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Betty goes into the library. This is where she meets Dilton, and They're gonna. This is where they're on the hunt for what the pattern is. She starts to. I think that by this point they've started to figure out that this isn't the first time this has happened in Riverdale. So, what's the pattern here? How often does this happen? And so she has Dilton's helping her try to figure that out by going through some old research books. Yeah, she starts looking at stuff in the 70s. She finds a picture that looks ridiculously like the, you know, Betty, Veronica, Red Sonja, and Vampirella from the 70s.
Okay, now this actually confused me because, again, the Riverdale series, one of the recurring story arcs is that Betty and Veronica's parents grew up in Riverdale as well. So whenever they needed to do flashbacks to things that had happened back when they were kids, they used the same actors. So, you know, Veronica plays, the girl playing Veronica will also play Veronica's mom when she's that young. Mm-hmm. So when I saw this, I thought they were actually saying that Red Sonja and Vampirella had befriended Betty and Veronica's parents when they were in school. But apparently that's not the case. So I'm, call me crazy, but does this actually, I don't think this actually gets resolved.
No, they talk about it a bunch of times and it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
All right, issue number 3. Things are getting weirder and weirder in Riverdale as Red Sonja and Vampirella investigate a string of grisly murders with the help of their new friends, Betty and Veronica. But as the body count increases, and the leads dry up, police suspicion turns to the outsiders who need to find the real murderer and fast. Alright, so the cover of this one has Vampirella behind bars and them looking in on her. And for some odd reason, they drew Betty with pom-poms because, you know, the whole time she was running around in a hooded sweatshirt and pants trying to solve a murder, but sure, cheerleader.
Well, if you also can look closely at Veronica, she's got pigtails and she's clearly also wearing hot pants. You can actually see that on her legs. And yeah, Betty's not just wearing a cheerleader's outfit. She's wearing a cheerleader's outfit showing her midriff and what are clearly short shorts, not a skirt.
Yeah. So this is where we get one of the variant covers that looks like a 45 record, which is one of my favorites. And mm-hmm. you know, it's got them in, you know, in a band, kind of a Josie and the Pussycats kind of a deal. It's cute.
It is. I like it.
All right. So, all right. So they're still on this picture deal, and they're looking through the yearbook, and they're trying to figure out like what the deal there is. Dilton thinks Betty is still in the room, and it turns out someone's trying to kill him. So we have a shadowy figure wielding a knife, and walks Red Sonja. That her and Betty discover Dilton's assaulted body, and the hooded sweatshirt murderer makes a run for it. He charges at Betty. Red Sonja runs after him. We get a lot of, you know, it's kind of like Thor and Conan, with the very wordy euphemisms that they use. Crom, this shadow is swift as a bat on the Turanian plains. Like, we can't just say, come back here, you. No, we have to go into a whole thing. There's a team up for you. Conan meets Thor meets Red Sonja. It would be just all that, right? It would be all them, you know, by this and that, and, oh, you know.
I have no problem seeing Conan and Red Sonja going after Loki.
Conan, not a fan of wizards, I'll tell you that much. She says, turn and fight, coward, reveal yourself, I say, and he says something in a foreign language, Tute Draku Sonja, and then dives out the window. Now, I don't understand why Sonja didn't go after him. Like, she, you know, she's a big strong warrior lady. Why she just didn't dive out of there. But she pulls an Arnold Schwarzenegger here, where she gets glass and there's blood on it. And he goes, at least he bleeds like a mortal. This attacker is no demon. If it bleeds, we can kill it, as they say in Predator.
Yeah, I freaking love it. She's like, curse this no weapon policy.
Yeah.
And of course, next time we see her, she's said screw it, and she's got her sword with her, and she's using it on the tackling dummy. Yep. Which I would pay good money to see somebody doing that in actual real life.
So poor Dylan's in the hospital.
But at least he's alive.
At least he's alive. And they talk about needing, and this is one of the big, the finer points of the story. They talk about him need, he lost a lot of blood in the attack, and though he's alive and they're trying to get him stabilized, he needs more blood. And this is where the this is where we start having the conversation about universal donors and type O negative blood and all of that. And that becomes a big clue as to who these people are that are attacking and why they're attacking. Yep, this the panel of Red Sonja beating up the tackling dummy. And then she gets called to the principal's office.
And this is where we get some of the artwork that really bugs me. It's a weird thing. We were talking about this before we started recording. The artwork, for the most part, in this series is really, really good. But for some reason, so many, every other panel or so, the female characters have weird lips. And if you look at Veronica, which says, this is all a cultural mix-up, Miss Singh. And then you look at the principal, and she said, unfortunately for you, the coach has intervened on your behalf. But the way her mouth is opened is so weird looking. It kind of reminds me of when, like, a Valley Girl would go, what?
Yeah.
Or something like that. And I'm like, why do they have her looking like that?
So after getting in trouble for bringing in a weapon to school, like a broadsword, we cut back to Veronica's house where they are training them with bats. This is one of those things where, like, it's a fun story, but I feel like they threw some stuff in just to stretch the story out. Like, did we really need a sequence of them training at this point? You know, they're supposed to be finding out who's murdering these people. This feels like a waste of time.
Exactly. You know, a little bit of them actually fighting in a later part, but they're not using bats, they're using their fists.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So this scene is entirely pointless. Not to mention, I don't understand why Vampirella and Red Sonja would be the ones passed out when I've done weapons training through martial arts. That shit exhausts you. If I was betting wrong after going through all of that, I'd be the one passed out on the couch.
Well, they did it this way, story-wise, to give Betty and Veronica time to talk about the picture that, you know, in a subplot that goes nowhere.
Exactly.
So they talk about it, and Veronica's like, shut up, you. Stop making a big deal out of nothing. And then they go to bed. And they wake up the next morning, and Sonja wants beer for breakfast, and Veronica says, a mimosa would be more acceptable. And she goes, what is a mimosa? Perfect.
We also see Vampirella hasn't actually fed on blood in a while, so she's getting pretty weak. And they talk about the blood bank. She's like, oh, I've heard stories about that. It's like a supermarket, right? And then Betty says she's going to go down to donate blood, because she feels really bad about what happened to Dylan. And in easily my favorite shot of Vampirella, she goes, I'll go with her. And she just looks so elated.
Yeah, the previous panel, she looks kind of drawn and tired. And then she perks right up in the next panel.
Well, I can imagine. It's like being, you know, it's like basically it's like going on a fasting diet and then all of a sudden finding out that you're going to Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
So, yeah, at the blood donation center is where they talk about the type O negative blood and all that. We cut back to the police station. The detective's trying to figure out what the connection is. Why is the detective wearing a low-cut shirt? You know, for a sort of female-forward type story, we certainly have... I get why they do it with Red Sonja. I get why they do it with Vampirella. Those characters are classically drawn that way. Why is the detective, like, got her cleavage all out?
There's more than a handful of shots where it's clear that if they could pose them where they're showing off their hips, their boobs, their ass, they're doing it. This is a very female-driven story arc, but it's obvious that they knew that it wouldn't just be girls reading this. They're playing to all of their bases.
I was going to say, they are playing to, you know, they know who their consumers are.
Exactly.
So the detective and the sheriff are starting to look more and more at Red Sonja and Vampirella. We cut back to Vampirella trying to sneak away into the blood bank storage, and she does the supermarket line again, and she's like, you know, I'm so hungry. Meanwhile, The sheriff and the detective are on the chase. They go in there and they find the one of the workers at the blood bank has been attacked. He's lying on the floor bloody. And they catch Vampirella drinking the blood. Not his blood, blood from the blood bank.
Yeah, poor timing there, Vampirella.
Yep. The classic Three's Company type misunderstanding. Yeah. We've got you now.
Red-handed.
We've got you now, red-handed. Arr. And so off to jail she goes. And that is the end of issue number 3. All right, issue number 4.
Mm-hmm.
As our story continues, we are getting into the back half of this. With the investigation at a dead end, Betty and Veronica split over what to do next. Red Sonja decides to take matters into her own hands. Meanwhile, the Pussycats decide to stage a benefit concert for the victims with disastrous results. Yes, we have an appearance by Josie and the Pussycats here because we couldn't get enough of the regular Archie characters.
I'm just loving how they apparently redesigned the Pussycats outfit, and they actually look a lot like Vampirella's outfit.
Yeah. I actually just read a Josie and the Pussycats Comixology exclusive. It's the Josie and the Pussycats in Space, which was based... are you aware of it?
Of course. I used to watch the TV series.
It's great. Like, they basically took the alien story and threw Josie and the Pussycats in there. It's fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes, Eddie, you're getting into the commentary. Thanks for that, pal.
There's a fun variant cover here of Betty and Veronica and of Red Sonja and Vampirella drawn as traditional Archie characters. They're in the car with Betty and Veronica. And they couldn't look happier. All right, so we open with shots of various people giving their take on what's going on, and you know, and do they think that Vampirella did it? And Vampirella says, "Your police are idiots." Mm-hmm. The Cult of Chaos will continue to kill as long as I'm in here. Veronica says, "This is ridiculous. There's no evidence linking you to the actual crimes. I bet those detectives are signing book deals already." a lot of back and forth here. And then Red Sonja says, "Enough, I'll just snap the necks of the guards and we'll be on our way." Like, you can't do that.
Yeah, I do love that she points out, you know, I'm offering to do this for free. I usually get a lot of gold for this kind of a thing.
Right.
I don't know why. I just love that line. She's just like, you know, you really should be more grateful that I'm even offering to kill people for you.
Yeah, like I said, they give a lot of great lines and a lot of great gags to Red Sonja. Like, I don't... Like, Vampirella doesn't get nearly as much, but she's more of, I guess, like a modern... She knows this world, so there's not much they can do with her, other than the blood bank bit. Alright, so she's been bonded out of jail, and they are on the hunt again. So they cut back... They head back to the house to figure out what's going on, and this is where, they talk about the blood issue and how O is universal donor and all of that. The art suddenly changes. You see this panel here where Red Sonja is like, blood types? I thought there was only one type of blood, red. Suddenly the art has changed considerably, and like, Red Sonja looks okay, but Vampirella looks like she's suddenly become an old lady.
Oh, it's even worse on the next page when they cut back to I guess it's Veronica at the blood bank. She looks like a grandma.
Yeah. What the hell?
I don't know. I don't know who took over, but yeah, all of a sudden, they clearly didn't want to try with the artwork.
Yeah, these are not well-drawn characters at all. We head over to the benefit concert where Josie and the Pussycats are playing.
And all of a sudden, the artwork is back to normal.
Yeah. Well, kind of.
Yeah.
They figured out that Betty's in trouble and that the concert's going to get attacked. And so Red Sonja runs off to meet her. Red Sonja and Vampirella take one of Veronica's dad's cars. I think it's a Lamborghini that they steal. and they go for a joyride. Join the joyride.
It's like, I'm sure Mr. Lodge won't mind us borrowing one of his cars.
Yeah.
Although, I'm not going to lie, I kind of wish we could have seen, like, a full picture of several of more of the cars in the lot, just to get a better idea of, did they take the most expensive car on there, or were they, was it a case of, it doesn't matter which car they take, they are going to get yelled at either way.
Yeah. Just to give Vampirella something to do, she's the one driving the car. But we cut back to the concert. And another student gets attacked. We have our hooded sweatshirt fella, and Betty, Red Sonja, and Vampirella come racing into the school. Vampirella flies out of the car with her wings and everything. The murderer is chasing Betty through the darkness. And Veronica actually is the one that catches him and kicks him in the head. Josie elbows him in the face and starts hitting him with guitars.
Okay, I know that is an ugliest sin guitar she's playing with, but those things are not that cheap.
All right, and then the lights go on and the murderers disappear, and Betty says, it's like they evaporated into thin air, or they're still here amongst us. We go back to the concert again, and that's when Dilton wakes up. And that is the end of issue number four. All right, so we're starting to get towards the end of this thing, and are you still having fun with this? You still enjoying it? Are you convinced it's the Cult of Chaos, or are you thinking it's all too easy? This has got to be something else here.
I'm thinking I need to remove Eddie from the room here because he's getting a little too demanding. You, out.
All right, well, you do that, and then you can think of an answer to my question. Fear and paranoia run rampant in Riverdale, but super sleuths Betty and Veronica finally flesh out the mysterious killers with the help of Vampirella and Red Sonja, and it's not who they think. All right, so I was asking you, you're at issue number 5 here. You've done 4 of these already. How are you feeling about this story so far?
We are getting some pretty good clues as to what might actually be happening. But for the most part, it seems like a lot of them are just kind of running around in circles. At this point, I thought we would have gotten a little bit more of a lead on some suspects. You know, kind of Scooby-Doo would narrow it down. Like, and then, of course, you find out that's the red herring or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they probably could have done this in 4 issues and not 6. There's a lot of padding here. Like I said, the first couple of issues, there was a lot of Sonja playing football. And that's the other thing, is as I'm going through, the story, and I'm scanning through the pages again, there's a lot of Betty kind of, snooping around. There's a lot of Red Sonja doing high school stuff. And Veronica and Vampirella are kind of pushed off to the side. Like, the biggest things that they do are, Vampirella gets arrested and steals a car. And she has the bit in the blood bank. Like, that, those were her big points throughout the story. I just, I feel like Amy Chu kind of had a lot to juggle here, and some characters got short shrift and other characters got more.
Exactly. I it's fine that, you want to give some of the best lines to Red Sonja. If she's more of the fish out of water, then yeah, she's going to have the better lines. But so much of this feels it could have been easily cut down. I mean, again, we go back to the whole the photo, and this has happened before in 69 and 73. That's never explained. There was no point in adding that. It just could have been, Dalton. Maybe Dalton saw something about other vampire attacks or something like that. That would have been a lot more interesting.
So the gang show up to Dalton's hospital room, and they're talking to him, and... he's saying that he doesn't remember much of anything. Red Sonja threatens the detective, which doesn't end up in her arrest like it normally would.
Mm-hmm.
Dilton kind of recalls the events of that day, but he can't remember much more than that.
He does remember there was at least more than one person who attacked him, so we get our first real clue.
Yeah. They talk more about the blood. Veronica says no one needs to know that. What if we use Dilton as bait to flush the killers out? And the detective says that's not a great idea. That's what they end up doing. So they head on back to the editor's office, And they say, we have the scoop. No, sorry, this is another student. I apologize. A student comes into the editor's office. She says, you have to see this, Libby. It's Betty and Veronica. They're on YouTube. And she says, well, I'm calling an emergency editorial meeting, like you do in high school.
At midnight.
At midnight, yeah. We disappear back to the hospital bed for a little while. And a few hours later, we have our murderers who try to sneak up on Red Sonja.
Oh, by the way, nice little continuity error. The reporter who comes in to see Libby, the one who's holding the phone, mm-hmm. and says they're on YouTube, in the top panel, she's wearing khakis, pants. In the bottom panel, she's wearing a miniskirt.
You would think, like, you know, in a top-tier comic like this, you know, like, Dynamite's not some fly-by-night operation. They've been around a while. An editor might have caught that.
Yeah.
All right. So, a few hours later, so Red Sonja says, what is it, Vampirella? She's guarding Dilton. And she sees hooded figures outside the door. And she says, where is Walsh? And then she opens the door, and Walsh is apparently knocked out. Walsh was the detective. Now I'm looking at this again. And she's surrounded by three hooded figures with red eyes. And she says, she's dead. And there's Vampirella. And they are attacked by the hooded figures. And Vampirella says, curse them, they're too fast. Not possible. Only Draculonians have this kind of speed. Sister, remember, I promised you high adventure. Use your instincts. She grabs the IV stand and she starts swinging it for all she's worth, and she starts knocking people out, and they go crashing through the window again.
Is it fair to say that the action in this comic suddenly gets a little too chaotic? There's a lot of, like, characters getting thrown in various different panels, but you never see where they're coming from or how they end up in that. It's just sudden panel, broken glass, panel, on the floor, panel, I've got a weapon. It just doesn't really look like it's very well coordinated.
No, it feels like they had to put action in here because it's a comic book for mostly boys, but like nobody really wanted to do a lot of action. In any case, not everyone of the three attackers, one of them ended up getting knocked out, and it turns out it's Miss Yeo, the history teacher, the Muslim lady from before. And she says, your time has come, and then they hit her on the head with the sword.
Which is very weird, especially when the way it's framed, it almost looks like they were trying to depower her rather than knock her out.
Yeah. All right, so this is where we get to the part where Betty and Veronica confront the editor, and the editor starts yelling at them, and we kind of let's read this. Betty says, well, we found that the victims were not selected at random. All the victims are O negative blood type, which is rare. That's just statistically not probable, which indicates they were targeted. This is that's Veronica saying that. All the bodies were drained of blood, so the blood must be used for something. The pentagram seems odd, maybe an attempt to throw us off the true nature of the crime. And the editor says, well, you seem to have done your research. I think you're both ready. And they both say, for what? And the editor... And I really need somebody to do, like, a real-life version of this, because this is so overdramatic. I laughed hysterically at it. She stands up, eyes red, her fangs out, and she says, for the truth! And out come a bunch of hooded figures.
Of course.
And dun-dun-dun, it was you! It was me, Austin! It was me the whole time. It was you all along. The whole editorial staff. But why? It was an offer too good to pass up. Money, fame, immortality, and getting into college. And she says, but you're the editor of the paper. What do you mean you can't get into college? And she says, do you know how hard it is even to get into Brown these days? Forget Columbia and Yale. So she did it, you see, to get favor so that she could get into the college of her choice. Terrific. She marches them off to take them to the person who's in charge of this whole operation, And Betty says to her, "So this is why you refuse to cover the murders. Not because it was sensationalist, but because it was you all along." And the editor says, "Man, I'm surprised it took you so long." Ah. "We bring you another offering, O mighty leader." And as it turns out, it's two of Vampirella's species from Draculon. And that is where we leave issue number 5.
There is a great line here where Veronica points out, when Livy's talking about signing with the vampires, and Veronica goes, "I thought you were vegan." And she goes, "It's an acquired taste."
Da, 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 da. I have to say, there are some very funny bits in this comic. I was entertained by it. I don't know if everyone who reads this would be. There's a great in issue number 6 variant cover here that's like an Atari game that's fun. All right, so issue number 6 here. I was talking about the humor. Like, the humor in the book, I find funny. You know, I know not everyone's going to. It's a little on the corny side, but I got a kick out of it. Issue number 6. "Will Betty and Veronica ever consider journalism as a career again, or be tempted by the more darker, lucrative path as social media influencers?" All right. "Is this the first and last time Vampirella and Red Sonja journey to Riverdale, or will they team up with the Punisher next? Indeed, will Riverdale ever be the same again? Stay tuned." There's a book we need. Red Sonja and the Punisher.
Have you read Archie Meets the Punisher?
No, that's that. I don't know if how far into source material Jesse did that one, but so maybe it'll end up as a syndicated source material. But I know Jesse's covered that before. He's a huge Punisher fan.
Oh, I would hope so. That's one of those, please, for the love of God, don't take it too seriously, and damn, it's hilarious kind of books.
All right, so we open up. Betty says, "Miss Arcudi, the science teacher, but you're supposed to be dead. Dracula, you were hiding in the science lab the whole time," says Veronica. And the blonde vampire says, "Seriously? It wasn't hard to fake my own death. Humans are so easily manipulated," and that's Miss Arcudi. And the male one says, "Please stop thinking we vampire-y are all look alike. My name is Vudosol. We're not all Dracula, you know." Huh.
Okay. This actually needs to become a reoccurring thing in a book. I would love to see a vampire character who is constantly getting mistaken for Dracula, and it's like, "Sweet Jesus, enough about Dracula!" Maybe they've even been around since the time of Vlad the Impaler, and it's like, "Oh my God, I can't even go out and do anything without someone saying, 'Oh, look, it's Dracula, I'm fucking sick of Dracula!'" I would kill for that story arc.
Yeah, that. Yeah. "Oh my God, it's Dracula. That's racist. My name is Bob."
Yes, somebody please make this a thing. I love it.
All right, so we move on here. We get a bit with the editor drinking some blood and all that, and this is where we get a bit of an exposition dump.
I lost track of how many times they repeat, so people started getting greedy and sloppy.
Yeah. "We had to cover our tracks, make it look like it was someone else. The Cult of Chaos are easy targets; they're always up to something." "So you mean you're not the Cult of Chaos?" "Of course not. Do we look like the mad god following type?" And the editor says, "I'm atheist, agnostic, really." And in comes Vampirella. And she says, "Dracula?" "No, Vampirella, but so good to see you again. Do I know you? I see you spent too much time here on Earth not to recognize your own people. Call me Eva. I'm afraid your arrival here in Riverdale has opened up all sorts of continuity problems between our worlds. Every time you show up here, it creates more problems." Every time? And then, what's-his-face here says, the dude vampire, "My story is your story, Vampirella. All our stories are tied inextricably together." And somebody pointed this out in the comments, that this apparently is a Vampirella thing, where, you know, they come from a whole other planet, and that she came to Earth in a spaceship, and the spaceship looks unmistakably like the Enterprise.
Oh, when I first saw this, I thought this was going to be a page showing all the different comic books that Vampirella has guests in on. I was like, oh, so she showed up in Star Trek. No way.
but one of the ones on my list as crossovers go is Star Trek and the Green Lanterns.
Because, of course.
"Your journey created a hole in between the border between our two worlds. The extended drought on Draculon left us all, us vampiry, starving. I stowed away. It was either that or death. It was... The ship crashes on Earth. Vampirella walks out, and he's in bat form, and he flies over her head. It was like walking through a buffet to find that we'd landed on a world where creatures filled with blood gathered in millions. What ecstasy! Soon, more and more Draculonians made it here, including Eva. Yes, but everyone got greedy, Vidoso. Now we must remove all the evidence, and that includes you, Betty and Veronica, because of course it does. And now we start kicking ass. Now we got to the punchy part. How dare you? And she kicks Vidoso in the head. He gets a broken bottle in the eye. He calls them brats. People go flying through walls and windows like you do.
Again, this animation, or I'm sorry, this action fight choreography is beyond chaotic, and a lot of it really doesn't make sense.
So Vampirella gets her ass kicked by Eva and Vidoso, but that gives Red Sonja the opportunity to, sword in hand, charge into battle with the football team behind her.
That was really stupid.
I wish if she was going to do that, if they were going to have Red Sonja come to the rescue with the football team, she should have been wearing the football uniform. Because why is she not in her battle gear going into battle?
They wanted one more shot of her midriff?
I've gotten quite enough Red Sonja midriff. I wanted to see Red... Look, again, if you're going into battle, you need your armor. Like, you know, troops don't go into battle and, you know, and decide, you know, now's a good time to show off my abs. I mean, come on. Get with it, comic book artists. While Red Sonja is charging forward, sword in hand, with the football team behind her, there's a fire started, and Betty and Veronica are trying to put the fire out and save the animals from the science lab. For some odd reason, it didn't seem like they did that much damage, but somebody yells out, the building's going to come down. Like, wait, how much damage did they do to this building?
Yeah, and I could be wrong, but looking ahead, I don't think they show any sign of the building actually coming down.
Yeah. There's some lazy art in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so they fight. Vampirella finally gets off the ground, and her and Eva are having a fist fight. Eva gets the better of her, but then Eva's tackled by the football team. She throws the football team aside, and the one-eyed Fiduso says, "My dear Eva, you are simply brilliant. I know no one is a match for us." And they get hit by a school bus.
I see that, and all I can think is that line from The Dark Knight. No, no, no. I kill the bus driver.
And there's Dilton, who's gotten out of the hospital, and he's sporting a nice red shirt and gray pants, and he says, "Vampire killer at your service, ladies." Sure. The cops show up. They inspect the bus. The two vampires turn into bats and fly away. But the editor's been arrested, like you do. And here we finally wrap things up. Everyone's back at Veronica's house, and they're watching the news. Red Sonja gets her beer. That's important.
She's been drinking beer repeatedly throughout this series. Mm-hmm. Every time they're back at the lodge house, she's drinking beer.
Vampirella says, "No, Vidoso was right about one thing. I did abandon my home planet. Draculon is starving. I need to go home." And she says, "I'm going to go the same way I came. I need to locate my ship." And they all hug. And we're left with Vidoso standing outside the window saying, "Excellent. Everything is falling into place, my dear Eva. Or should I say Draculina? Yeah, my sister Vampirella was never the brightest." And then they'll do the next set of stories, issue 7 through 12. And that is where we will leave you for the time being. So, I know I asked you this off air, but for the purposes of the podcast, are you going to finish this? Are we going to finish the story at some point later this year?
You're the boss. You tell me.
That's a question, Alexis. Do you want to continue to read this thing? Are you?
Yes, yes. We'll continue to read. However, I think we may need to do a little sub-reading. I mentioned before, I have not really read a lot of Vampirella stuff. I didn't even really know much about her as a character until I started seeing how many comic shops had cardboard cutouts of her all mm-hmm. over the place. And I think I would have enjoyed this a little bit more if I had known more about the characters, especially since they're leading up to them going back to her home planet, and I know nothing about her origin story. So I need to go do a little research before we get into the next one. Otherwise, I don't think we're going to be lost, but I don't think we're going to enjoy it as much.
So other Red Sonja team-ups are Mars Attacks Red Sonja. Mm-hmm.
Ack.
I tried to get my kids to watch Mars Attacks on New Year's Eve, and my wife shot that shit down. She was like, no, thank you. I hate that movie. And I'm like, you don't like anything good. But now...
See Michael J. Fox get turned into a lime green skeleton.
We might have to look at this series, Mars Attacks. Mars Attacks Red Sonja. She is the red-haired she-devil with the sword. They are green-skinned invaders from the red planet. Yes, those dastardly Mars Attacks Martians are attacking again. And these are the Martians of old, the Martians of the Hyborian Age. And so it's up to Red Sonja to stop the attack. But how will steel and strength and savagery stand against laser guns and sci-fi technology and weird, weird Martian science? Only one way to find out. Oh, it was written by an Eisner Award winner. Well, now we have to do it.
Oh, Lord.
So, yes. We're going to be doing some extra source materials throughout the year. Myself and Alexis have a bunch of Disney... some fine literature that was turned into Disney comics, such as Frankenstein and Dracula and Don Quixote. So, we're going to bring those to you at some point. Me and Chris Sheehan and Chris Bailey are doing some extra source materials, Welcome to WrestleTopia and some other stuff. So over the course of the year, you're going to get some extra source material from both sets of co-hosts. And I think I might just have to twist Alexis's arm and continue to pursue these Red Sonja crossovers and Vampirella crossovers. These all seem fantastic to me.
Well, that's what I got to do to stay on the podcast, then, Sylvie.
I suppose so. There's actually a 12-issue collection of Vampirella Red Sonja. Yep, the first ongoing series co-starring the daughter of Dracula and the She-Devil with a sword from Eisner Award winner. Wow, all these Eisner Award winners getting in on the act.
Excuse me.
Trying to see how many issues this is. Looks like there are 12 issues in all. So maybe we'll go back and do their team-up series as well at some point.
Okay.
So be prepared for a lot of cleavage in your future. That's where we're going with this podcast. It's the Source Material Cleavage Podcast.
Mark, you've seen my profile pictures. I deal with enough cleavage.
All right. In the meantime, go ahead and that's a wrap for the show. Go ahead and do your plugs.
All right. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic. Again, I want to say thank you to everyone who participated in our charity drive for St. Jude. We, through your purchases, we were able to donate over $250 to St. Jude's this year. I am so thrilled and so happy that so many of you helped out with that. Right now we are getting, you know, it's kind of funny. I was like, okay, Christmas is over. Okay, how long until I should start getting ready to promote Valentine's Day? Yeah, I need to start doing that immediately. So we're probably getting ready for our next big sale here coming up before too long. Keep a lookout on our Facebook, Instagram, and Under Duress Twitter. We will be announcing that as soon as we can. As always, we have our shops open on Etsy and Handmade at Amazon. I still don't know when we're going to be back on the road at the Comic-Con. ones. It looks like a lot of the shows are playing it safe. We don't know when it is safe to gather in large numbers yet. So as soon as they know something, then they will tell us, and then I will know something, and then I will post it, and I will let you know where we will be next. And until then, as always, you can find us, like I said, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have both of our shops open, and we are going to be putting some new products online as soon as I can sit down and actually get them created. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic.
I have two words for you. Red Sonja Tarzan. That's three words, but that's okay. Who's counting?
Oh, boy.
There's so much Red Sonja. There's the, hey, you know, apparently Gail Simone did a run of Red Sonja. There's a graphic novel called The Complete Gail Simone Red Sonja.
Ooh, nice.
Let's see. What else? What other crazy crossovers are there? Witchblade Red Sonja. Do you know anything about Witchblade?
Yep.
Oh, boy. I know nothing about Witchblade, but I'm willing to learn. Let's see.
Had a very ill-fated live-action series for a while.
Let's see how many crossovers there are at Vampirella now. Graphic novels. All right. We got Aliens Vampirella. Yes, sir. We've got Vampirella Red Sonja, Vampirella The Dark Powers. Not a lot of fun Vampirella crossovers, it looks like. Apparently they weren't into crossing her over. Just for shits and giggles. Betty... Who else crossed over with Betty and Veronica?
So, do I actually get to review, like, comics that aren't just fun crossovers? You know, like, actual canon books again in the future? Or am I just here for shits and giggles?
Yes.
Sorry, because it's just kind of dawning on me. It's like, okay, you had me read Catwoman, When in Rome, and Batman Dark Victory, and both of those are canon, and they're great books and everything, but now it's like... And now Alexis is going to read Hamlet with Donald Duck.
Yeah. Listen, lady, I keep you around for the shit nobody else wants to do.
Well, at least you're having me read more Harley Quinn crap.
Harley Quinn's fine. It's all good stuff. Yeah, not a lot of fun Betty and Veronica crossovers either. There is, though, Betty and Veronica Vixens. You wanna...
Well, and don't forget, they also make an appearance in the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina book, which we're going to be finishing later this month. Plug, plug.
Yes, yes. All right. I could seriously do this all day. So instead, this whole week, you know, I dedicated an entire month to Christian picking out comic books. This week is all Alexis all the time. So you heard her tonight on this show. Tomorrow, we switch gears. You know, more in Alexis's wheelhouse, more animation. We're going to be doing the first part of the Wonderful World of Mickey series that just started up. The first 10 or so shorts from that series that got released last month, November, the end of November, on Disney Plus. And then something a little bit more serious, a little less silly. We'll be doing the second season of His Dark Materials. But we'll also have the Podsman on to do a dual review of NXT New Year's Evil and the Brody Lee Celebration of Life. We all know that Brody Lee passed away at the end of December, and instead of doing New Year's Smash, they rewrote the show as a tribute show to Brody Lee, John Huber. Also known as Luke Harper in the WWE. So we're going to review that show. We'll review the New Year's Evil show from January 6th. Last week, speaking of Alexis Haina, I had her on for Wonder Woman Come Back to Me. Yeah, quit complaining. I brought you on for the Wonder Woman book. Now, that was fun. That was serious, right? Yeah?
That book is the equivalent of the improv game where you have to go, yes, and...
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Eventually, I'll let you pick a book again. How does that sound? Like, you know, sure, you can pick something you actually want to cover. It's fine.
Yay!
After we do Red Sonja Mars Attacks,
of course,
and all the Disney books. I need to get you a sound effect of like a head being smashed into a desk over and over again. It works better than you silently rolling your eyes at me that nobody can see. Myself, Alexis, and Rob Winfrey reviewed Soul and Wonder Woman 1984. Myself and Jesse did our end of the year Metal Hammer of Doom show. We reviewed the Clutch Live from the Doom Saloon Volume 3. We talked about all the albums that we reviewed in the previous year, such as we did. And that's it. That's what we got. Oh, we also we threw up a quick watch along for the Ryan Garcia Luke Campbell fight. Myself and Robert Winfrey. I don't know how often we're going to be able to do those because he's always got like MMA coverage. But you know, I think the next one we're going to do, assuming it doesn't get canceled because of COVID, Caleb Plant versus Caleb Truax on Fox, and that's that's one of the few fights that hasn't been canceled on January 30th due to COVID. So. And there's no MMA that night that I can tell, so we'll bring you that as well. All right, that wraps up our show for the evening. For Alexis Haina of Honeysuckle Rose Creations, I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.